Welcome to Healing with Worth, a podcast dedicated to healthy recovery and instilling hope in the wake of betrayal trauma. We are women that have experienced this intimately and want to support other women so they don't have to walk the path alone. We are not professionals, and the content of this show is not meant to replace therapeutic healing. If you would like to join a therapist-led support group to help your betrayal trauma, you may reach out to us at healingwithworth.org to join one of our online worth groups. Now, here are your hosts, Janine and Naomi.
Welcome back to a new season of Healing with Worth. I'm Janine, and today Naomi could not be with me. I think this is the first time that she has not been with me in quite a while, but the show must go on, and she'll be back with us next week. For those of you who are new to the podcast, welcome. And if you are a returning listener, thank you, thank you, thank you for your continued support. Today we have on the podcast Stacy Soames. Stacy is the owner of Fireweed Coaching in Boise, Idaho, and is one of the many therapists that help the women at Worth put the pieces of their life back together. Stacy graduated with an MA in clinical mental health counseling and is a licensed professional counselor. She has spent countless hours studying betrayal and has done well over 2,000 plus hours of counseling, leading support groups, and divorce support groups. For the last 5 years, she's been working as a certified betrayal trauma coach, a divorce coach, and is an APSATS trainee. So whichever path you are on, she would love to walk with you and support you and to help you reclaim your safety and peace. So welcome, Stacy. We are so glad you're here.
Thank you so much.
I'm so glad you're here. I'm used to saying we because Naomi's been with me for so long. But yes, I'm so glad that you're here.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. It's interesting to be on the other side, you know. I'm usually working with someone else. So to talk about myself is a little weird.
It's important, I think, to share our stories. It's scary. Our husbands have put us in a real kind of scary position.
Absolutely. Terrifying.
Terrifying. Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to talk to Stacy a little bit about her journey and why she became a counselor. And we're also going to address a topic that when we get married, we really don't think much about because we have this ideal life planned out for ourselves. And when we get married, that does not include divorce. That's not in the picture. Mm-mm. It's only the happily ever after, right?
Yep. I always say divorce is not an option, or it wasn't for me until it became the only option that I had.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. We know many of our listeners are in great pain because our ideal marriage has been undermined and sabotaged by the pornography use of our husbands and all the unhealthy behaviors that can creep into marriage because of it. And this puts us in a very hard place to be able to discern sometimes. And
Absolutely.
It also puts us in a position where we are faced, like I said, with making some really hard decisions, and the marriages that we wanted may not be a reality. So today, Stacy, we're going to talk to you about your journey and the big D word, divorce.
Okay, let's do it.
So let's just start out. Give us a snapshot of your journey.
Okay. Well, so that question's loaded, right?
Like, yeah, for sure.
It's like, where do you even start? But I see my story beginning back in 2016. I was a stay-at-home mom of five little kids, and I thought life was just great. I loved being a stay-at-home mom. Like, I was never just a stay-at-home mom. I relished my role there. I actually went to a BYU conference, was women's conference with some friends. And I remember sitting there listening and learning, and just this nagging something deep within me was saying, something's not right. Something's not right in your marriage. Like, and I couldn't put my finger on it. And I would, you know, I'm like, well, this is good. And we're, you know, this is great. We have a house. We're like, what is it? I just don't know. And I was driving home and I had this like peace come over me that was very not typical. And I thought, what is going on here? When I arrived back at my house, I walked in, no one was home, but everything was just a mess. It was like cereal on the floor. The laundry that I put in before I left was still there. Like the whole house smelled. And I had this moment of thinking, I just don't really feel appreciated or seen in my own house. And this is just a snippet of how I have been feeling for a long time. And so I actually fell to my knees and I prayed, like, Heavenly Father, can you help me figure out what's going on? There's something off. Later, I asked my then husband, do you feel like something's wrong? And he was like, what? No, everything's great. What are you talking about? You know, and I thought, all right. Not even 2 days later, my world came crashing down. I found out that my husband had been unfaithful and that there had been pornography use throughout our marriage. I had no idea. I was completely blindsided. So that was my initial D-Day. All the things, you know, not eating, not sleeping. Luckily, I was put right into a great counseling service area. We went to LifeStar. That was the program at the time that we were engaged in. And it was so scary. You know, it felt like my entire world had come crashing down. But anyway, my husband and I worked recovery for a long time. And it was the hardest thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
And I told him, I'm going to give you the opportunity of a lifetime. And that is, I'm going to work on forgiving you and we're going to fight through this. But I'm drawing a line in the sand. There cannot be any more affairs. Like, that's where I draw the line. And needless to say, we worked it. I could see the change in him. It was beautiful. It was awesome. We were speaking at different events and talking about how amazing recovery is. Unfortunately, though, there was some really negative fallout because of what had happened at his work. He ended up in some legal issues and we ended up having to move, kind of had to walk away from our lives and move over to the other side of the state and start over again, which was a blessing in disguise because I was able to come back closer to family. And after we moved, I had this impression one night that was like, you need to go back to school. It's time. And I was like, what? We're good. He's in recovery. I'm loving being a stay-at-home mom still. It's so hard, but I'm doing the best that I can. I don't have time to go back to school. So I applied to a school that's about 20 minutes away from me, and I did not get in. And I was like, what was that? I thought I was supposed to go back to school. So I shelved it. And about 3 months later, I had a prompting that woke me up in the middle of the night. And it was like, it's time to go back to school. And I was like, okay, I know that I am passionate about recovery. I want to help other people. I want to become a counselor. I don't know why this impression is coming again, because I already tried that, but I did. I got up, I applied, I got in.
To the same school?
No.
It was a different one.
It was an online program, which I thought, why would I want an education that's online? I feel like as a counselor, that in-person connection is really important. But who would have known that a year, 2 years later, we would have been in the middle of COVID? And I being...
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Having, you know, school online was the greatest blessing because I needed to be home with my kids. Yeah. So anyway, I wanted to help others and I was really passionate about that. But as soon as I got into school, I could tell some things were changing again. I could feel it. Like, things weren't adding up. I was sensing the red flags. And I started to find out that my husband wasn't in recovery anymore. It was so disappointing because I had given years to trying to forgive and throwing my whole life into this. And I look back on it now and I'm like, school was one of the things that helped me. It gave me some drive and some purpose and some focus. But one night I asked my then husband, you know, do you love me? And are you committed to recovery still? And the answer was, well, I love you as the mother of my children. That wasn't the answer I wanted to hear.
No.
And the other one was, and I'm not interested in working recovery anymore. And I thought, okay, well, that's my answer. And at the time, I did not know the reality of what he was doing. Like, I really caught kind of little pieces together, but I really didn't know. But I knew it in my heart. Like it was time. It was time. And I felt the Lord tell me that, you know, like you've fought, you've given it your all, and it's time to take that step. So,
yeah. How disheartening, especially after you were kind of in the throes of recovery and really trying to make the situation that you had been put in work.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah. And the one thing that kept coming to my mind was, okay, one day when my kids say, Mom, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew that I could look at them and say, I gave it my all, guys.
Yeah.
I tried and I turned over every rock and I didn't have a choice anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There's two people in a marriage. There's two people that need to work.
Absolutely.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. I know that many of our listeners are going to be able to relate to the surprise and the, you know, the trauma that's involved. I'm just shocked at what I have experienced in this journey. Like, I'm shocked at what women put up with, mm-hmm. what they deal with to try to make their marriages work.
Yeah.
And I have so much respect for women that I did not have as much before.
Oh, I say that to clients all the time. I'm like, I say this, the world might tell you that it's the easy thing to do to just leave, you know, or like you're only a powerful woman if you leave. But you say that until it happens to you.
Right.
And then you realize, oh, some of the most amazing women stay and fight. You know, they really are warriors. But the fact of the matter is, it's hard either way.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Yeah.
It kind of sounds like the point in time when you decided that you knew that it was time to end your marriage was really that kind of admittance
mm-hmm.
that your husband gave you that, you know, there was not a real desire to stay in recovery and continue to fight for the marriage.
Yeah.
Often women want to make marriage work, you know, but they're not seeing the action really mm-hmm. necessary to drive a relationship forward. Any suggestions you would have for them? You've got the words, but not the action.
Yeah. You know,
how do you reconcile that?
I just remember thinking, like, when I enter into a marriage, I'm in it for the ups and downs. I'm committed, like, ups and downs, right? Well, I committed to certain kinds of ups and downs. You know, maybe there's financial challenges mm-hmm. in a marriage, health issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was something that we dealt with, you know, a death in the family or rough points in a relationship. I mean, we all have ups and downs and times when we feel disconnected. It could be just, you know, figuring out who I am in this relationship. That's even, you know, within what's one of the challenges that we deal with. But I was at a conference not too long ago and they used this analogy of our hands. And those kinds of challenges are within a marriage, you know, and this is me, this is him. But when there's infidelity or porn use, they've hopped a fence.
Right.
They're over here now.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't say that was okay. You didn't boost them over that fence and say, hey, that's fine. But that's on him. That's on him to fix and, you know, acknowledge and break through the denial and come back over here. I started noticing a lot of big red flags of things that I did not agree to in marriage. And I did not agree to cheating. I never agreed to that.
Right.
And being disrespected and being abused. And I don't use the word abuse like lightly. I was never hit in any way,
right.
But emotionally, you know, I was abandoned. Financially, there was major issues. Mentally, all of those ways, I didn't, like, that wasn't something that I had signed up for. Manipulation, gaslighting, control, all those things. Those were the things that I was watching for. And as I saw those things continue to get worse and worse, I knew I can't, like, for my own mental health, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And why Naomi and I are so passionate about helping women recognize these patterns of gaslighting and abusive behaviors, even neglect. Like, that's not really considered abuse, but it is.
Oh, yeah. You know, women will say a lot of the time, I have never felt more alone in my entire life, yet I have my partner here sleeping next to me, but I'm on an island. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they're not connected emotionally, that they've emotionally left the relationship, which is huge for a woman, because that's so important to us typically.
I could see some of those behaviors that I was putting up with for a long time. And I see a lot of women do as well, because we will normalize putting yourself through trauma in order to show somebody that we love them.
Yes. I know.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's that. I feel like I had an awakening to that, or maybe it was the spirit that helped me see that one day, but it was just like, no, I can't. Like, I just physically can't. I have to collect whatever's left here and give that to myself and my kids, and it's time to forge forward.
Yeah. Well, how did you make it through those early days after the first disclosure? What was kind of your route?
Oh, goodness. Getting help was huge. You know,
Support groups
were key for me.
Individual counseling.
Yeah, those were my lifeline. You know, lots of self-care. I used to work over at Bloom for Women and Dr. Skinner.
Yeah.
And he would always say, you've got to remember the three basics, right? When you're at the beginning of it. And he said, you're not going to like this because they're so basic. But he's like, you need to move your body, you need to eat, and you need to try to sleep. Like, those three things are key. I was like, what? I don't want to hear that. Those things are just so boring and basic, but it's true.
Yeah.
You know, when we're in that high trauma, we forget to eat. I mean, I've met with women that have lost 30 pounds or gone the other direction, you know, or can't sleep at all or sleep all day. So it's really important that we focus on those basics right out of the get-go. But yeah, self-care was huge, and getting myself support and being able to manage those triggers as they come, learning how to breathe and listening to music and podcasts and all of those things. One of the things that I did is I started putting motivational quotes all around me. I changed my whole bedroom. All new bedspread, all of those things. So I just wanted to create a space, like, find my safe spaces. That was a big piece too. And my bedroom was one of those. So
did that ever feel like a full-time job to you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I definitely remember those days as well.
Yeah, but absolutely.
Felt like it consumed my every waking moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Trying to take care of myself.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. What about after you kind of made that decision that divorce is going to be necessary? Kind of how have you worked through that?
Honestly, one day at a time, 1 hour, sometimes 1 minute at a time, I kind of rallied my tribe. I needed people who could support me in all the different ways. I had my friends I could reach out to when I needed help with my kids. My friends were amazing. You know, my family showed up. I think about, having a good bishop who was there to help me, good ministering sisters. I kind of had to have this tribe around me, even my own attorney that I ended up having to hire. I thought, I can't fight this, so I'm going to hand this to you, and I need you to fight this for me, because I need to preserve that mental space that I have for myself. That was really important. But finding grace with myself and just having patience and showing up in the most loving way I could, because this is very traumatic stuff. Mm-hmm. It is so painful. And I don't think anybody really understands unless they've walked that path, just really reaching out and leaning into the Savior. That's honestly what got me through a lot of it.
Yeah, for sure. So do you wish you would have walked away from your marriage the first time, or do you feel like that time after the first disclosure was a time for you to strengthen yourself and make you even stronger? Do you regret it?
I don't. People ask me all the time, do you feel like you've wasted years staying in that space. And my answer is always no, not at all. I was not strong enough the first time to make decisions of that magnitude. I had a lot of introspection, a lot of self-esteem issues, things like that, that I needed to work on. And I can also see the Lord in a lot of different other areas, you know, like I thought it was the end of the world that we had to move from our community and right. all of that. And we moved across the state, but I see now, oh my gosh, like I needed to be closer to my parents and my siblings. They helped me and strengthened me to make healthy decisions for myself the second time around, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, I'm so grateful for that time. And I'm also, like I said before, grateful that I know that I gave it my all. There is so much peace that comes to my heart every time I think, is there something else I could have done? Or, you know, was it as bad as I thought it was? And,
right.
and every time I just land on, no, you gave it your all.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nice that you had family support too, because I know sometimes women don't have the support from their families that they really truly need.
Yes.
I would imagine a betrayal of your family, you know, if they sided with them more than you or supported him more than me, like that might feel like another betrayal.
It absolutely does. And, you know, you can see the grief goes so much further than just the relationship.
Yeah.
Because, yes, you know, I think about my ex's family and I've had to put up a lot of boundaries there. And it's definitely shifted the way that our relationship is now. And it is like there was a lot of grieving that came with that, a lot of sleepless nights and a lot of processing that I had to do because, you know, I was like, I've been a part of that family longer than I haven't been a part of their family.
Right.
And I thought they loved me like I was a daughter. And then, you know, when things happen, family sticks with family. And that was really, really hard. That was a hard thing that I had not anticipated. So.
And you would think with a situation like yours, where there was an affair, you would think his family would be more supportive of you. That's so hard for women. It just feels so unfair.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually, side story, I had a dream one night where I had the opportunity to get up on a stage and I had all of my like binders of evidence of like why I had to leave this marriage.
Uh-huh.
And I was in a room with people that kind of stopped talking to me or interacting with me. Some of them, his family. And I was so excited because I was like, here, now you will understand why I had to do this. And every time I tried to open my mouth, nothing came out.
Interesting.
And I was like screaming and trying and no one was paying attention to me. And I kind of had this moment that was just like, just let it go. You've got to just let that go. And you've got to just, you know, find forgiveness and move on because they don't have the ears to hear it. They don't. So. Yeah. You can't get stuck here. That was a pretty profound experience and helped me realize it doesn't matter. It's okay. I can heal without that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And without them, you've got your tribe.
Yeah, absolutely.
And support where you need it.
Yep.
So, well, let me just ask you a couple more questions before we end here. When you went through your divorce, how did you see the world differently?
I have found so much empathy for those around me. I remember going on a walk with a dear friend at the beginning of all of this, and we had a little experiment where we walked by a bunch of homes of people that we knew. Mm-hmm. And as we walked by, we said what we knew about each house. And it was like, oh, her mom just passed away. Oh, they just found out their so-and-so has cancer. And just the little blips of what we knew. It was amazing to just have this realization of we don't really know what's going on in people's lives. And even though it may appear like the family that's sitting next to you at church has it all together, we really don't know.
I know.
And so I try to see people with that lens now, like the lens of what's going on with you and what can I do to show up for you or, you know, show you extra love. I feel like, you know, everybody has their challenges and struggles, and some are just more visible than others. And I'm grateful for that awakening of sorts, that I can be more sensitive to that and find ways where I can reach out and I can assist instead of just sit back and think everybody's got their stuff together.
Yes, so, we don't.
We definitely don't. Yeah.
Oh, sometimes we like to put on the mask.
And, yes, we do.
You know, pretend that we have it all together. But
I have definitely become, you know, I'd made the decision, the deliberate decision to own my story. And I feel like there's so much power in that. That might not be for everyone. It might be too hard, especially initially. Mm-hmm. But when we own our stories, you know, we are the ones that get to write the endings of our stories. And so as a divorced woman, that was something that I've never really done. I've never really been that transparent. And so that's how that's one way that divorce has changed me. It's helped me find my voice. It's helped me, you know, own that there are parts of life that are really hard. And just because something like this has happened to me, you know, doesn't mean that I can't speak to my own story and my own experience. And because I have started to do that, you know, over the last however many years, it's the blessings. I mean, I can't even name them. And the people that I have been able to connect with and help, that is one way that I have changed drastically. I used to be the person that brought a plate of cookies over when something's going on. And now I know better. When I know something's going on with someone, I show up and say, I'm here and I'm listening.
Yeah.
And if you need me, I'm right next to you.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely relate to that. I have definitely honed in on my listening skills more than I have many years ago.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which is actually a great blessing.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's the greatest blessing?
Well, yes, that's one. I was actually reading a book recently. It's called Build the Life You Want by Arthur Brooks. Mm-hmm. And it's also co-authored by Oprah Winfrey. But they were talking about the four areas in people's lives that typically contribute to happiness. And those four things are family, friends, faith, and purpose. I've been thinking a lot about how divorce has impacted all four of those areas in my life for the better.
Hmm.
And so I think I'm grateful for the peace that I have. I mean, for years, and I know women can relate to this, waking up and just having that racing heart, feeling like you can't breathe, feeling like you are an anxious mess. I remember waking up and shaking for months and just thinking, I cannot live like this. I have such an appreciation for waking up and feeling peace. It's everything to me. Yeah, I've since remarried. My husband and I have been married for 3 years, and he has 5 children and I have 5 children and we have 1 together, which was a huge surprise. We are very unconventional. We don't all live together. He spends half of the time up in Washington State, and every other week he comes to me, and people think that we are crazy for the life that we lead, but we wanted to maintain stability for our children. And so this is what we're going to do for now. And it's been working just great. But my greatest blessing has been finding him. And oh my goodness, this little boy, we named him Bridger because he's the bridge between our families.
Oh, that's darling. I love that.
He is the second greatest blessing.
Oh my gosh.
And back to those four things, my relationship with my family is rock solid. My maiden name is Rock, and I love that. But I have a new appreciation for each and every one of them. And I hope to be able to help them in any moment where they need the help that I needed. My friends are everything. My faith increased in leaps and bounds because experiences like this, they can either push you away or draw you close. In my case, my testimony became rock solid because I know that the Lord loves me and is aware of me and knew what I needed, even when I didn't know it. And then the last one is purpose. And, you know, through this experience, I've now helped hundreds and hundreds of women. And even though this is really hard work, there's some days I have to go lay down or take a nice long shower because it's heavy. but it is so fulfilling. And I'm grateful for that purpose that it gives me every day. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here with me and sharing your experience and your thoughts on divorce. And we would love to have you back on the podcast.
Anytime.
I know Naomi's really going to be upset for missing this because I'm sure she had so many questions of her own that she wanted to ask.
Bring me back. I would
okay,
love to.
Perfect. So thank you all for listening and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us this week on Healing with Worth. Make sure you visit our website, healingwithworth.org, to enroll in a therapist-led support group or to check out our blog. If you found value in the show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes or wherever you may listen, or simply tell a friend about the show. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode, because you are worth it.